Good evening, gentlemen. We're up to Brachot, the third chapter, and we are about to begin a very, very interesting topic. We're holding on page Yud Ches, if we were looking in a Gemara, and page Mem Zayin on the Beis, if we're looking in Ein Yaakov. And the subject that we're going to discuss tonight is really the question of how we must honor the deceased. And this concept of honoring the body of someone who passed away is a concept that dates back in our history to Adam and Eve, to Adam and Rishon, to Avram and Sarah, Abraham and Sarah. When we have the Mara Samach Pela, when we go to Hebron and we have over there the graves, we say over there are buried Adam and Eve, the three patriarchs, and their wives. And we know that that burial plot was purchased with much ado and much money by Avraham Avinu. Abraham, when he purchased the Maris HaMachpelah, he had to spend a lot of money. And he was teaching a concept to humanity. He was teaching the concept that we invest in the deceased. We view the human being as a precious treasure that God puts on the planet. Chaviv Adam Shnivra B'Tzelem. How treasured is man that God created him in his fashion. And we not only are responsible to respect and value a human being in his life, but we also respect and show our respect after the person has passed away. And what we respect is not the corpse, the body that just passed away, but in showing respect to the corpse, we are in essence respecting the person, because the concept of respecting the deceased is the concept of showing that we believe that there's more to the human being than the body. There's a neshama, there's a soul. And when a person passes away, we say it's not like an animal that passes away and there's nothing left. It's not like a tree that was cut down and can be burnt by a fire, but rather it is a human being that passed away, a representation of God that was on this planet. And we say when that person passed away, Hashem took his soul, takes it back up to him, and Hashem gave a special mitzvot in the Torah with regard to honoring the deceased. The concept of honoring the body of the deceased has three major places where it appears in the Torah. The Torah tells us, "Biyomo tikberenu." We have a mitzvah to bury the person who passed away on the day that they die. Not to let the body lie around, to start rotting, start smelling, start getting wormy. And here the Torah gives us the mitzvah specifically about a sinner, a person who deserved the death penalty, a person who was caught, let's say the person was caught raping a married woman. A terrible sin. And he was warned, and he looks at the witnesses in the eye and he says, "I'm going to do it anyways," and we catch him and he was warned he'd get the death penalty. That person's going to get the death penalty. But if we had a Jewish court, he would get the death penalty. But the courts are warned. Even such a sinner, he is a representation of God on the planet. And the Torah says, "Biyomo tikberenu," you must bury him that day. Let's say the person went around telling other people to stop worshiping God. He says, "I want you guys to come with me. I found this new idol. Join me in the worship of this idol." So the person could end up finding himself with the death penalty in the time of a Jewish court. And nonetheless, the Torah says, don't leave him hanging. Don't leave that body lying around. Doesn't matter if he died because he was a sinner and the courts had to put him to death. Specifically there, the Torah reveals to us this concept of honoring the body. Don't leave him hanging. The Torah gives us two commandments. A biblical prohibition against leaving the body hanging, if the person was executed by hanging. And a biblical commandment to bury him on the day that he passed away. And this applies till today. We try to bury a person as soon as possible. We don't leave the body lying around. There's a third concept when we bury the dead, and that is the concept of the soul. What is a human being different than an animal? It's question that's been perplexing philosophers for generations. The Nazis were willing to view a human being as just a more sophisticated animal, and that led them to the capacity for killing many human beings, because if it's all a question of classification, well, we classify them as a lower life form. Well, in Judaism, the Torah teaches us that the planet is divided. There are inanimate objects, there are plants that grow, there are animals, there are kingdoms, and then there's the kingdom of the human being. And we have a special mitzvah when it comes to the human being to honor the body of the deceased, because we say that body had a soul in it, it's a representation of God. And when we bury that body, one of the things that we're doing is we're giving testimonial to the fact that we believe that there was godliness in that body. We believe that there was a soul, and that soul is going back up to heaven. God collects the soul. God brings it to judgment. God brings it to rest. There is Gan Eden. There is going to be payback. All of these concepts are really encapsulated in the act of honoring the deceased and burying them. The Talmud tells us that there was once a very vicious king. He killed many Jews. He killed many people in general. He caused havoc in the world. He captured many continents. Literally, he captured much of the world. According to one opinion, he really ruled over the world. And when he passed away, so he appeared in a vision before one of the rabbis, Nebuchadnezzar, and he asked him, how did they judge you in the world to come? So this was not Nebuchadnezzar, I'm sorry. This was Titus, the one who destroyed the second temple. And he said, when he passed away, he said, I don't want God to be able to judge me. So he left a decree that they should cremate his body and pour it over the seven seas. So he said, God could never catch me because my body will be scattered. My body will be cremated. There'll be nothing left to judge. And he said the way he was judged when he came to the world to come was that every day they'd regather his body, they'd gather the ashes from the seas of the world, put him back together again, judge him again, and be burnt again. So the concept of cremation is completely foreign to us. There's much response written about what happens if a person has a contagious disease. If we have no choice, if it's a danger to society if you leave the body lying around, so then how do we do it? Because it's a transgression of all these commandments. We have a problem. So we find a way to do it. We find a way. If there's no choice, so there's no choice. But in general, our approach is that cremation is a no-no. It's a transgression of these three concepts. Two direct biblical commandments, and the third, a basic Jewish philosophy, a basic tenet of Jewish faith. And so, with this understanding of what is life, what is death, what is honoring the deceased, let's begin our Gemara. Amar Rechava, Amar Rav Yehuda. Yeah. Did who give an answer? What answer? So he told them, that's what happens to me. Tito said, this is how they judge me every day. He said, part of my judgment, it's a long story, I'm quoting a part of it. He said, part of my judgment is that every day they regather my ashes, they put me back to life, and then they cremate me again and scatter my ashes the way I declare it should be done to me. We're skipping a long part of the story. This is a long story. We're taking just this point from the story. Amar Rechava, Amar Rav Yehuda. Kol haroe tamet veinom laveu. If one sees the deceased, he sees a corpse, he sees someone's being taken to be buried, and he doesn't accompany him, he doesn't join the levaya, the funeral procession. Ovel mishum, he is in transgression of the verse that says, Lo'eg larash, he who mocks the poor, cheref oseu, is cursing the creator of the poor. What's a person doing when he mocks the poor? He's saying, no one can touch me, you're poor, you can't touch me, so I can make fun of you. The Pasuk says, King Solomon taught us that when you mock the poor, what you're saying is there is no God. You can't touch me, so I can do what I want. If I'm in power and you're poor, so I can do what I want. Lo eg larash, he who mocks the poor, cheref, is really cursing out, oseu, he who made the poor. So by the same token, if one sees a funeral procession, and he doesn't take the minute to take a few footsteps with the procession to honor the deceased, he's in transgression of that verse. Because he's saying, oh, why should I honor you? You're dead. You're not going to pay me back for the honor I show you. Why should I take the time to honor you? It's as though there is no creator. No one's looking at what I'm doing. Why not? You're supposed to honor every human being.
If the guy would have walked by when he was alive, there's no way such a company.
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. When a person comes to your home, and he's a guest at your home, so when he departs, when he goes to his journey, we have a special mitzvah to take a few footsteps with him, 4 footsteps of accompaniment, to show him, I'm with you, I feel bad you're leaving my home. By the same token, this man is leaving all of us, he's taking his last journey, so we have a mitzvah to take 4 footsteps with him. You don't have to take more than that, but 4 footsteps, you're on your way to business, a funeral procession is passing, to take 4 footsteps out of your way to go with the deceased. But if he did accompany him, he did join the procession, what are his wages? Amar Ravasi. Ravasi taught, Alava Katuv Omer. About him the verse says, Malve Hashem Chonin Dal. He who has compassion over the poor, he is really loaning God. Meaning Hashem says, the poor, when you have compassion over them, you don't assume you'll necessarily get it back. God says, why is it that you're having compassion over them? Obviously, because you recognize I'm in the world. So it's as though you've given me a loan. Umechabedo chone nevyon. And he who really honors his creator has pity over the poor. Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yonatan. The Talmud now tells us a story. 2 rabbis, Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yonatan. Rabbi Chiya we've discussed in the past. He was a contemporary of Rebbe's. So he was the last generation of Tanan. So he was walking with Rav Yonasan, Havushakli ve'azli bevet akvarot. So they're walking through a graveyard. Havikashadi atchilte Rav Yonatan, and Rav Yonasan had his tzitzis garment, which is a mitzvah. We have a mitzvah if we wear a four-cornered garment to put on it those strings that we call tzitzit. That's a biblical mitzvah. And his Havikashadi atchilte Rav Yonatan, his tcheles, his tzitzis were hanging low. Amar le Rabbi Chiya, so Rabbi Chiya said to Rabbi Yonasan, Dalye, lift them. They shouldn't be there right near the graves. Kedei shelo yomru, so that the deceased won't say, Lemachar ba'in etzleinu, tomorrow they're joining us. Ve'achshav mechalfin otanu, and now they're mocking us. The deceased cannot perform mitzvot. When we openly perform mitzvot next to them, it's as though we're mocking them. It's like eating a meal before someone who has to fast. You're showing them, I could enjoy life, you can't. So, by the same token, when we walk in a graveyard, we don't overtly show mitzvot that we're performing, because we say the greatest thing a person can do while he's alive is a mitzvah. When you do biblical commandments, you help the poor, you put on tzitzit, you put on tefillin, that's what we're here for. So it's the greatest fulfillment of life. What is one doing when he's doing a mitzvah? That's life. That's living. They, those that are deceased, can no longer perform mitzvot. So we don't walk in the graveyard and show off, ha, I'm living. How good is it to be living? That's something we don't do in a graveyard. And performance of mitzvot, if only we'd have the right perspective, is just that. It's a celebration of life. You don't do that in the graveyard. That's like saying, we can mock you. So that's what he told them. Put your tzitzis in your pants. Hide your tzitzis. They shouldn't feel like tomorrow they're joining us, meaning in the future they're going to die too. And yet now they're mocking us. Amale, so Rav Yonasan asked Rav Chiya, umiyadei kuli hai? Do they know that much? Ve'aktiv, but the verse says in Ecclesiastes, in Koheles, ve'ameitim einam yode'im me'uma. The deceased, they don't know anything. So we know that Koheles is one of the works that the rabbis contemplated whether they should make available to the masses or conceal. King Solomon wrote the work of Ecclesiastes, in which he constantly questions. It's a work in which he spends what the Christians divided as 12 chapters, He spends 12 chapters running through life, contemplating different philosophies, what's right, what's wrong. He says, I tried this, I tried that. And he finally comes to a conclusion. Sof davar hakol nishma. Ultimately, he comes to the conclusion. He says, be a God-fearing person. Keep the mitzvos. But it sounds like you could spend part of your life going off to Tibet, consulting with the Dalai Lama, spending your life searching, because on the face of things, that's what Shlomo HaMelech says he did. So the rabbis taught us there's a deeper meaning to what's going on in the book of Ecclesiastes. But to the layman, when you read Ecclesiastes, it seems like, well, King Solomon had his day. He certainly went around searching, so I could spend my life searching. And so the rabbis contemplated whether they can make it available. So one of the verses which you read, and on the surface it's a verse that contradicts Jewish theology, is this verse. The verse says, "V'amitim enam yodim uma." The deceased, they don't know anything. So that's what Rav Yonson asks him. Why are you telling me it's as though I'm mocking the dead? Do they know if I'm here with my tzitzis hanging out? Amar lei. So Rav Chiya answered him, "Im karita, if you've read Torah, lo shanita, you haven't reviewed. Ve'im shanita, and if you've reviewed a second time, lo shilashta, then you obviously haven't reviewed the third time. Ve'im shilashta, and if you've reviewed the third time and you haven't figured it out, lo pil shulach, so people didn't explain it to you. You never had a rabbi explain to you well." The verse that says, "Ki achayim yodim sheyamutu," for the alive know they're going to die. Those that are alive know they'll ultimately die. Elu tzadikim. That verse is a reference to those that were righteous throughout their life. Shebemitatan kuim chayim. That throughout their life they're alive, and even after death, even post mortem, they are considered alive. Now this is a beautiful concept. We say that a person lives on. A person who does a good action, he lives on. A person saved someone's life. So he did. When he dies, he didn't die. That other person is continuing. A person builds a bridge. A person does something to help humanity. So he lives on. The concept is that if a person lives a righteous life, he never dies. Look, we're still learning the works of Ravashi and Rashi and Marsha and all the different commentaries. We're still learning what they're saying. They're still here. There's a famous story about a young rabbi in Europe. He went to a village, and the village had interviewed quite a few rabbis. They weren't very learned in that village, and no one wanted to stick around. So the board decided, this goes back 200 years, the board decided they have to catch a young rabbi. So they set up the graveyard, and they paid for tombstones. And they put on one tombstone Maimonides, on another tombstone Rashi, and then a third tombstone Rabbi Akiva. They put all the different great sages throughout the generations, and they bring this young rabbi, just out of rabbinic school, doesn't know too much about the world, and they tell him, you know what a great town this is, look at who our previous rabbis were, you know what rabbis are buried in this town. So they take him to the graveyard and they show him Maimonides, they show him Rabbi Akiva Eiger, they show him one after the other. He says, wow, he signs the contract. He's there a few weeks and starts thinking, he says, wait a second, Maimonides wasn't even in this neighborhood. Rabbi Akiva Eiger is buried in Vilna. He starts putting two and two together. And he calls over the board and he says, wait a second, why do you guys have tombstones for these people? How can you say they're dead here? So the board says, look, you can't tell me that Rabbi Akiva Eiger is buried in Vilna. Go to Vilna, they're learning his works. He's alive and well. They'll talk to you right now what Rabbi Akiva Eiger says. Go to any other town, they'll tell you what Maimonides says. He's alive over there. Over here, no one learns a word. Here, he's dead. This is where he's buried. So that's the tombstone. He's buried here. So this concept, even though it's a joke, but the concept is a true concept. We say, when we're learning their words, they're still alive. King Solomon worded it in the Song of Songs. He said, "Dovev siftei yeshenim." Dovev, he makes the lips move. We have on tradition, there's a Kabbalistic concept, that when we say, when we repeat Torah that someone said before passing on, then even their lips in the grave will whisper the Torah that we say in their name. So you could open the grave and I don't think you'll see the lips moving. I don't know, I never tried it. I assume that the concept is not to be taken literally. So this concept that the righteous, even in passing, are considered alive, that concept is learned from the following pasuk. the pasuk in describing the different great warriors that were in David HaMelech's army, in King David's army, so the pasuk says the following: Uvnayahu ben Yoyada ben Ishchai Rav Poalim Mikav Tzeel, Benayahu, the son of Yehoyada, the son of a live man who did great things from Kav Tzeel, this man Benayahu, the pasuk describes his bravery. What kind of great warrior was he? Huikat Shnei Ariel Moav, he beat up the two great lions, Moabite lions. Vehu Yarad, and he went down into the pit. Veikat Ari Betoch Avor Biyom Hashaleg, and he beat up a lion in the pit on a snowy day. So the lion is bigger, the lion is stronger, it's a snowy day and the lion has four paws to stand on, he has 2 feet, and he won the lion. So we're going to see, the Gemara is going to explain all the different words in that pasuk have deeper meanings. On the surface, they mean what they say. But as we know, there's pardes. There are 4 levels of understanding in every pasuk. Pshat, remez, drush, sod. Pshat, the remez, the allusion. Drush, the derivation. And sod, the secret behind the pasuk. So the Gemara is going to give us a deeper understanding in this pasuk. But this pasuk describes him as Benayahu ben Yoyada, the son of a live man, ben ish chai. And the Gemara questions, Atukuli alma bnei matininu? What does it mean he was the son of a live man? Everyone else is born from dead men. What's that mean? Ela ben ish chai, but rather when the verse says he is the son of a live man, that is to teach us, Shafilu b'mitato karui chai. He was the son of a person who's alive. Even after death, he's alive. And from here we derive this concept, from this pasuk, that he's called ben ish chai, the son of a live man, to tell us he's a person who's all about life, a person who lives a righteous life. So then even after death, he's alive. His life goes on, his life continues. Our sages gave us this concept in different forms. Chazal said, Bra kara de avua. The son is like the continuation, he's like the feet of the father. He's the continuation of the father. So if a person established children that are good children, so that's one way a person continues living. And now the Gemara tells us another way, a person who does good deeds. And there's a tradition from the Chafetz Chaim, Rav Yisrael Meir of Radin, he taught that people who cannot have children, people who have fertility problems, so they have to be extra zealous in the performance of this mitzvah, of doing acts of good deeds. He says, someone who has children, so they continue his good deeds. They continue his path. So everyone has to be a good person. We all have to try to be exceptionally good. But a person who has no children has to recognize that his future, his capacity to connect with eternity, his future lies in the hands of his deeds. If he's extra zealous in doing good deeds, so that's what the verse says in Isaiah and Yeshaya. Val yomar ha-saris henani etz yavish. A person who's castrated shouldn't say, well, I'm a dry tree, that's it, all I have left is to wither. What? Right, we read that haftarah on a fast day, right. Kicho amar Hashem nasarisim. Because so says God to those who have been castrated. Those men who cannot have children, Hashem says, you keep my mitzvot, and I'll make for you a Yad Vashem. I'll make for you a special place, a special reputation. Your name will last in my home. Even though you don't have children to maintain your name, I'll make for you a Yad Vashem. That's where we get the name from, Yad Vashem. That pasuk. So, this pasuk that we just read teaches us this concept, that a person continues living if he does good actions that keep him alive. I heard this from the... I didn't hear it from Chafetz Chaim directly. I once had the good fortune of renting a room by Rabbi Yoel Zuchovitz. He used to be a rabbi in Nir, and he couldn't have children. The Nazis did a thing on him, and he couldn't have kids. So he and his wife, they couldn't have any children, and their house was a soup kitchen and a million other things, like a house drumming on chesed. You'd wake up in the morning and they had lines of hundreds of people waiting, Jews, non-Jews, everyone waiting for food from their door. And they'd go collecting from different bakeries all their leftover food. And that's how they ran a soup kitchen. It wasn't like they were millionaires and they weren't out collecting funds. But they got the leftovers from caterers and bakeries. And they literally had, I'd leave the house in the morning and there'd be long lines outside waiting. And one time I'd eat the Shabbos meals with him. One time he told me the reason they're so zealous and doing good deeds is because they couldn't have kids. So they're fulfilling this Chafetz Chaim. He's not spending all his day learning. He's taking much more time than anyone else would to do things that no one else would, just to help the poor. So it's a big mitzvah. Everyone has to do mitzvot. But he was extra careful about it because he said, that's my future. That's what Chafetz Chaim taught. Yeah.
What did they do different?
I don't know. I never discussed it with him. I don't know. The verse says, this great soldier, Benayahu ben Yoyada, was the son of a live man, Rav Poalim Mikavtzeel, of great deeds from the city of Kavtzeel. So the Talmud says, Sheriba Vekibetz Poalim LaTorah, that he gathered and he did much actions for the sake of the Torah. It sounds like he set up academies for learning Torah. He taught a lot and he gathered people and he did great actions for the sake of the Torah. V'hu ikat shnei ariel Moav, and he destroyed the two great lions of Moab. So over here the Talmud understands that the word Ariel is a reference to the temple. The temple has many nicknames. One of the nicknames of the temple is Ariel, the lion. When the Navi laments the destruction of the temple, so one of the lamentations is, Hoy Ariel, Ariel. Woe, lion, lion, how have you fallen? That's a reference to the temple. And the temple is called Ariel for numerous reasons. One reason is because it was shaped like a lion. If you look at the shape, the shape, if you ever look at a map of the temple, so it's wide in the front and thinner in the back, just like a lion has a big mane. So in the front, the lion gets wide. Every other animal gets towards the front, it's either the same size or it gets thinner. The lion, because of his mane, as you go to the front of the body, suddenly it gets wide. So that's the way the temple was built. So that's one understanding why the temple is called Ariel. So the Talmud understands when it says he beat up the two great lions of Moab, it means that throughout the two temples are also called lions, there was none who came close to him. So obviously this verse was written in prophecy, which the Talmud tells us in Yuma, that this verse was written in prophecy. So, Huhika, when it says this great warrior of David HaMelech, he beat up the two lions, the two Moabite lions, that means he outdid all the people in the two temples, and the temples were given the foundations by David, who is a descendant of Ruth, the Moabite Gioris. So that's why it's called the two Moabite lions. And he went down into the pit and beat up the lion on a snowy day. So one understanding is that he always maintained purity, and if he had to immerse himself and it was a snowy day, so he broke through the ice and he dunk. So that's the bravery that the verse is referring to, and really we could make a run for it and finish. So we'll make a run for it, and then we'll try to get back to this. If Ikadami and others say the Tanasifa de Berav Bioma de Sitva, that on a snowy day, that means a wintry day, which are shorter days, right? Especially here in Israel, you can have a day that's all 7-8 hours. On that day, he took the most complicated and difficult Medrash Halacha on the book of Vayikra that sums up all the halachot of the different sacrifices, and even though it's so complex, he was able to review the whole thing on a wintry day, on a short wintry day. So that's what the verse means, that he destroyed the lion inside the pit on a wintry day. The lion is a reference to a section of Torah, that's that section, the middle of the Torah, that's what it says, B'toch habo b'yom ha-shaleg, on a wintry day. And if we remember, the next week we'll begin with these two lines that we just read. We'll try to get back to this and see if we could get a little bit more depth. But for now, we'll run up to